This is Pastor Bill Quinn of Love Never Fails, heard daily on Bible School Radio, 91.3 KDKR Decatur, Dallas-Fort Worth, and on 91.3 KYJC Commerce.
Portions of KDKR programming do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or staff.
Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
So do you trust your bank? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon, this is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, trust is an important aspect of any banking relationship. So how are relationships between banks and their customers? Jennifer White, Senior Director of Banking and Payments Intelligence at J.D. Power, is here with me today to discuss the J.D. Power 2024 U.S. Retail Banking Satisfaction Study. Jennifer, welcome to Prudent Money.
Thank you for having me on. Pleasure to speak with you again today.
So, Jennifer, J.D. Power, of course, does a lot of these studies within the banking industry to see how things are between their customers and the banks themselves. What are some key points that you found out with this latest study?
J.D. Power measures annually the relationship that customers have built with their banks and the experience they have in those interactions. What we've learned in the last year is that overall satisfaction is pretty much holding steady. There really isn't a change in consumers' perception of the experience that they're having with their bank on a regular basis, at least at the top line aggregate level. But what we do see is that for the second year in a row, consumer trust in their bank, in their primary bank relationship, has been eroding.
So, you know, interesting on the press release, it said retail bank customer satisfaction holds steady, but trust declines, which is what you're talking about. Is it possible to have a satisfied customer without a strong trust relationship with the bank customers?
You know, I think when trust is broken, a consumer is likely to switch their partner in whatever facet of their life that we're talking about. It could be their utility, it could be their credit card partner, it could be their bank, it could be their doctor. What we see happening over time here is that consumer trust is eroding. So it isn't necessarily broken in a way that it's scary, but it is leaving more consumers with a mind open to perhaps there's a better relationship out there for them to have.
You know, considering many of the stories that have come out about banks over the years, especially the large banks, are you surprised that the percentage of clients likely to change is just barely in the double digits, or were you expecting maybe a larger number?
Actually, I think most people would be surprised to hear that the likelihood to leave your bank completely and move all of your primary banking relationship to a secondary bank is really small. It's single digits, and it's been single digits for some time. Now, what we see occurring, though, is that, you know, a single digit of a 4 or 5% that was happening prior to the pandemic has now almost doubled. We're at 8 to 9% willing to leave or considering leaving in the most recent research that we've done. And at the same time, we see that there is an increasing proportion of customers. In fact, it's 13% in our 2024 study that say that it's at least probably likely that they'll consider switching their bank in the future. Why aren't these numbers higher? Well, it's a lot of work to change your bank. Banks have done a lot of work to try to make opening new accounts easy and to try to make, you know, moving money as simple as possible. But it really is just a lot of hassle. And so before a customer makes that decision to just walk away, there has to be some sort of incentive and or push to do so.
You know, it's interesting that blends right into the question that I had for you, because of all these banks and their stories and all kinds of things in the media. And I ask people, you know, their opinions of it. And the consistent reply that I get is, Boy, I would love to leave this bank, except it's just too big of a process to do so. And I wonder if that kind of insulates the banks a little bit from having mass exodus. Because it truly, as you said, it truly is a big process to move a banking relationship.
I think it has insulated banks in the past. I think that insulation is wearing a little thin, however, because it is so easy to move money. It is so easy to open up new accounts. So maybe you won't change your checking account relationship, because that's where your direct deposit's going, and maybe you're already paying bills out of that account. But you might be more likely to open up a secondary high yield account somewhere else. You may be more likely to, you know, open up some form of CD, perhaps at a different institution that is going to offer you a better rate or some sort of promotion. Or perhaps, for many customers, they're really driven by fees. You're going to start opening up secondary accounts at places where you aren't being charged fees to keep your money.
You know, y'all did this study at what I think is a real interesting time for banks, because banks have seen quite a bit of money flow out of the banks to investment brokerage houses, where these high yield money market accounts are paying so much higher than banks. How have banks been able to either retain customers, or how have they dealt with this? Because this is has got to have been a big challenge.
I think there's three things that help banks retain the loyalty of their customers in this type of environment. The first is maintaining high levels of customer service. When you have an online-only bank without a branch that's available to provide service, and you may not have the network of even a call center that's quite as wide as a large bank might have in place, it's harder to get problems resolved. It's harder to eliminate and reduce friction in your everyday financial life. So that's one thing that keeps customers where they are. I think other things that banks can do that help retain their customers is, when you are opening up those new accounts, taking that extra moment to reassure customers that they're in the right account for their needs, based on the behavior that the bank knows about them, being able to demonstrate how much you understand your customer base, that has a lot of value to it. And finally, I really think that the ability to provide strong advice and guidance, and it might not be about a high yield account, it could be about, you know, how to avoid having to pay more taxes next year. That advice or guidance that banks can offer, and it's everyday advice or guidance. It isn't just move money from investment A to investment C. It can be, you know, here's the best way to save for your next family vacation. That type of interaction with the bank will help keep customers loyal, instead of maybe chasing a few percentage points of interest rate available elsewhere.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes in industries like y'all are talking to the banks, excuse me, that banks, they don't really even realize that there is a problem. Do you think that the banks are seeing this and saying, "Boy, we really have to do something about this," or do you and be proactive, or do you think that they're maybe kind of ignoring it a bit?
I think banks recognize that deposit levels are changing, and that, J.D. Power's data tells us that on average, consumers have somewhere between 2 and 3 standard banking types of accounts, so checking, savings, and the otherwise, at different institutions. So there is a competition to maintain deposits. And so while a customer might keep their primary relationship with you, there is a threat that there's a secondary account elsewhere. And once you do open up that secondary account, that hassle factor that we were talking about earlier, that insulation, that becomes even thinner again, because now you've already got accounts open elsewhere, and maybe it will just be easy to, you know, shift money from one location to another.
So as you go through this process and do this study, anything that surprised you from the survey?
You know, one of the things that surprised me is that when we think about, we ask customers what it is that's damaging their trust with their bank. And you would think things like, there's been a lot of talk about branches closing, or wait times in a branch. And all of those are important. They're on the list, don't get me wrong. But the primary reason that a customer has that trust broken that might have them take action to move their money is when they have a surprise fee charged to their account, followed secondarily by when the availability of their funds is delayed in some ways. So these are fundamentals about understanding how to best interact with your bank in order to avoid fees, how to make sure you're in the right accounts for your behavior so that you aren't being charged fees, and how to use digital tools to help, you know, warn you when, you know, a fee might be coming or help you understand when your funds will be available. These are things that are preventable, but they are the top drivers of when trust is broken between a customer and their primary bank.
And Jennifer, somebody wanted to see more information. I'm assuming they could go to jdpower.com. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the program today and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Take care.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. You know, I was just thinking, something that Jennifer said was so true is that you just move an account, one account, over to another bank, and you just kind of take it slow and take it easy, and then you start to realize, well, maybe it's not that big of a deal to move my accounts. You know, there is just such a hassle factor when it comes down to just doing an overhaul of your banking account and moving everything. And the other thing, too, is that banks, of course, are going to make mistakes. It just happens. Where's the hassle factor in correcting that mistake? And that, unfortunately, you won't see till you've been with the bank for a while. But one of the questions that I did get just a couple days ago is that, hey, you know, this happened. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit about this on the other side of the break. This happened to me with my bank I've been to since the 90s. And, you know, should I move banks? And what do I look for in a bank? And that's a little bit tough to know what you look for. You have to go out and just really see what's most important to you and what kind of checks the boxes. But we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Hey, this is Bob Brooks. Stick around. I'll be right back. Hi, this is Bob Brooks, host of the Prudent Money Radio Show. You know, for most people, the 401k plan is the most important part of the retirement plan process. At the same time, knowing how to invest, well, it's a challenge considering that you're given a list of investments and expected to know which ones to choose. What if I told you that there is just one investment process that you need to understand? If you had to narrow it down to one thing to know, this would be it. On May 7th and May 9th, I'm going to be presenting a webinar entitled The 401k Plan, The One Thing You Need to Know. If you are unsure about your 401k plan, this is your opportunity to learn something that can change your retirement future. In addition, I'm also going to give you some ideas on what to do with your accounts outside of your 401k plan. Well, today, sign up at www.prudentmoney.com to learn how to increase the probabilities of success with your 401k plan.
Dr. Charles Stanley.
The devil has defeated every single servant of God. The only person that the devil's never defeated is Jesus Christ. And when Jesus Christ gets on the inside of us, what does he do? He equips us to be winners and not losers. That is, he wants you to win in your spiritual life.
The teaching of Dr. Charles Stanley on In Touch, helping you grow in Christ every day.
In Touch, weekdays at 12:30, here on KDKR.
Welcome back. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thanks so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Now, I was thinking about what is important to myself as far as my bank goes, banking relationship. And I tend to carve out a relationship and hang on to that relationship for a very long time. Loyalty is very important to me. And I think, as I think through it, probably the most important thing is, you know, customer service. And when a problem does occur, will I get taken care of? Will I be able to make that phone call and realize that I'm making it on behalf of a problem that was created at the bank? So to limit my time in that situation, And fortunately, I have a bank that checks all those boxes, and I feel very blessed to have that. But the question that comes up, though, is, you know, where do I look as far as a new banking relationship? How do I go about that process? And as we were talking about before the break, I think it really does come down to taking and moving one account. Maybe you have a savings account that is paying you 1.5%, versus if you moved it over to a Fidelity or a Charles Schwab, they'd be paying 5%. Well, that's kind of a no-brainer to begin with, to move that account. But just some of these things that Jennifer mentioned fees, and that how important it was to, if that's something that really is at the top of your list, that you consider that. So tough question to answer, but I do believe that if you get out there, you'll find that it's not as big a deal as you might think it is. So over the break, Chris played the promo for the webinar that we're going to be doing this next week, Tuesday and Thursday, two different times. And I'm really excited about doing this because the 401k plan is so very, so integral to most people's retirement. And yet it's probably one of the hardest things to figure out, well, am I invested in the right way? Am I doing the right things? Am I putting enough back? You know, and there's just not a lot of confidence in how they're approaching their 401k plan. So I got to thinking, there's got to be an easier way to approach this, where if you do one thing really good, you're not guaranteed, of course, but you increase the probability of having success in the future. And we're going to be talking about that one thing. And I encourage you to go and sign up for it, because we're going to be talking about how to deal with 401k and how to deal with investment accounts on the outside of 401k plans. There's a lot of IRA money that's sitting in IRA accounts. So all you have to do is go to www.prudentmoney.com and sign up and get on the list, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week. I had an interesting email sent to me from a listener who's been with a bank since the 90s. And I thought, this is such a great, well, it's not great that it happened to her, but it's such a great example of what you really need to be thinking about these days, especially if I don't think this particular listener was in any credit card debt, but for those people who are in credit card debt and are using balances and trying to manage it and making sure that the bank doesn't shut down one of your credit cards. And it's a little bit of a long message, but I want to read it and kind of answer it as I go. Hey, Bob, another question for you. I have banked the same bank since the 90s. It has morphed several times, meaning it's changed into a lot of different banks. I usually use my credit card instead of my debit card. I have never made a late payment and always pay off balance in timely manner. So I used my card on a Monday, and on the next day it wouldn't work. Said it was revoked. Now, I haven't ever heard revoked, but that's interesting. So you've got someone that has been a customer over a very long period of time, since the 90s, and has never had a late payment, always paid off the balance, and used her card and said it was, and they wouldn't take the charge. The charge wouldn't go through. Never heard that term for not accepting credit cards. Well, me neither. I called to see what was up on 327. She said she couldn't tell me anything. I would have to wait for a letter to arrive. Don't you just love how they are treating this individual who's been there since the 90s? Week later, a letter came and said it was that I had not kept up personal information. I will swing back around to that here in a second. Not true. So I went to the bank in person, met with a young man who turns out was just there temporarily, moving on the next week. But he said he would try to help me. He called the PNC credit card division, had them on the phone as he was getting information from me. He did say that the letter I gave him said I had time to give them correct info, at least 15 days left. I made sure he had all my info and left. I received a letter that said my account has now been closed. Failure to maintain current contact information on my account. Seems like they had enough info to give me the monthly statements. I also have at least 63,000 reward points. So I guess my questions are, should I just accept their decision and let it go? Is it time to change banks? Did I need a local bank? I just don't think that way that this was done is right, fair, and I'm kind of ticked. I'm kind of ticked just listening to it, reading this. But I guess they really don't care. Bingo, right there. Thanks for always helping me and all you can do for us. Looking forward to your guidance and advice. I'm keeping the faith. Man, that does just, you just think about that. Think about being in this listener's place and being treated like that after being a very, very faithful bank customer for so many years. And here's the deal. Banks are scrambling right now. They're looking at their exposure to the credit card and to a credit card debt. They're realizing that a good chunk of their portfolio of credit card debt is in interest rates that they're just should be criminal. They're just overcharging the public, 25, 30, 35%. And they realize, they see the writing on the wall, is that this may catch up to them. So that personal bank information, you'll log in and they'll ask you for this personal bank information to update your numbers. It's easy to blow off. I've done it tons of time. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to see is, number one, what kind of condition do you say that you're in? And number two, how has it changed from the last time? Because if you're putting bogus information in there, that's going to catch up with you, or it could catch up with you. It could be a red flag because they know the characteristics of people who might do that. I'm sure that they have a bunch of psychological testing on that. Because think about it, you could write down anything that you wanted to. I wouldn't advise doing that, but you could not tell the truth. And so that is probably banking customers they want to get rid of. So what they're doing is they're taking a long, hard look at the person who's got $20,000 worth of debt on a credit card, and they have a $30,000 credit limit. And they're looking at the question, should I shut down and remove the $10,000 and just give them $2,000 above what they owe? Banks will be doing this. I promise you banks will be doing this. Credit lines that are open today may not be open tomorrow. What do you do if you need to make sure those are open? Well, first of all, I think everybody needs to make sure that their credit lines stay open, because that hurts your credit report, your score, if they start shutting these down. So make sure that you update your personal information. If you have an opportunity to do that, do it. And if you have a bill that you're paying back to the credit card company on a monthly basis, do the automatic bank draft. They love having customers on automatic bank draft. They don't like it when customers don't use the automatic bank draft. It gives the bank a lot more control over getting their money. So you might set that up on all of your accounts. And it just depends if you need these accounts open. I would say from a credit scoring standpoint, we probably a good idea to keep them open. But listen, personal history doesn't matter. It's all about today, number one, keeping the bank in good shape and good order, which I do, and I've said this many times, I do believe that banks have created a major problem for themselves. with the situation with these high interest rates. I think they've gone way overboard, and people are just aren't going to be able to pay it. Well, hopefully that won't be the case, but we'll see how that works out. But it's a different time now, and banks are doing really what they were doing before the 2008 financial crisis. They're making sure that they have good risk on the books and that they're not going to run into a problem. This is Bob Brooks. If you got a question for me, please go to the website at prudentmoney.com and send it in, because we are all out of time. Till we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.